to the organizers for hosting the meeting here at Perimeter Institute. I've been enjoying my time here very much. So I'm going to give a talk on which has is mostly going to be a review talk on the topic of scattering amplitudes in ADS-CFT integrability, and is based on a number of papers with these authors. So this talk will exclusively focus on the sort of the classic example of ADS-CFT, the maximally supersymmetric ADS-5 / CFT-4 system relating 4D superyang mills, n equals to 4 superyang mills, to superstrings on ADS-5 plus S5. And of course, we've seen a lot of progress from the integrability perspective, in particular towards the question of determining the scaling dimensions of composite operators in the gauge theory. And here we are close to a complete solution for that spectral problem. On the other hand, also for the class of observables of scattering amplitudes in maximally Suzy-Young mills, a lot of progress has been made in the last years based on generalized unitarity and on-shell methods, recursion relations, and also very influential this Wilson loop scattering amplitude duality that also brought the link to the integrable structure. And I will try to review some of that progress and, you know, with a tilt on how to connect these two approaches. So after an introduction, I'll speak about tree-level amplitudes and their symmetries. In particular, discuss the superconformal, the dual superconformal, and the emerging Youngian structure. And then I'll turn to the question of how much of these structures survive at the loop level, and the role a particular form of regulator for regulating the IR divergences can play there. And in that section, I'll also report on some ongoing work together with my student, Theo Schuster, who's also here. Good. So this is the model we all know and love, n equals 4 superyang mills, consisting of gluons, 6 scalars, and 4 gluinos. The action, as was said this morning, is quite ugly. Nevertheless, it is, as we have gotten to learn, the prototype of the simplest, the highest symmetric prototype of a gauge theory. So you can think of it as the H atom of gauge theories, if you wish. And we will be interested in the planar limit of that theory. So we take the n of the SUN gauge group to infinity. The global symmetry structure is PSU22/4, which in the bosonic sector consists of the conformal symmetry in 4 dimensions SO2,4 and the R symmetry SO6. And I've spelled out the generators here in a spinner language, bispinner language for the momenta, for the Lorentz generators. The conformal, special conformal transformation is K, dilatation is D, R symmetry, and then we have two sets of fermionic charges. One set are the Poincaré supersymmetries, and the second set are the conformal supersymmetries, S. And you can all write them in a nice 4x4, or rather 8 plus 8, so 4 plus 4 plus 4 plus 4 matrix structure, super matrix structure, and write down the algebra with these graded indices in one line. We will be interested in scattering amplitudes in this theory, so we will scatter the, as external states, we'll have gluons, scalars, or fermions, and such an endpoint, n-particle scattering amplitude will depend on the momenta of the external legs, on the helicities of the external legs, as well as on the color degrees of freedom, as all fields are in the adjoint representation, so you have the color indices AI running around here. And if you restrict to the planar theory, this color structure is completely universal. In the planar limit, you have a single trace factor up front, and you can factor that out and study the amplitudes in a so-called color-ordered formalism. And then what the real interest is in these partial or color-ordered amplitudes down here, where the color structure has been stripped off. Again, in this theory, as I said, we have helicities ranging from 1 to minus 1, denoting the gluon, the gluino, and the scalar degrees of freedom. Good. The right language to study scattering amplitudes is the spinner helicity formalism, which I want to discuss briefly here. So the property you use is that the asymptotic massless scattering states in the gauge theory, say even in general d dimensions, will be labeled by the momentum p, the null momentum p, and a label h, which labels the little group, leaving p invariant. So this is SOD minus 2 in d dimensions. And of course, in 4 dimensions, the helicity is just SO2. So you have these quantum numbers appearing here. So for the gluon, you would have helicity 1 and minus 1, for example. The momenta you then conveniently re-express as bispinners by contracting them with sigma matrix here, and then write them as a direct product of 2 commuting spinners, lambda alpha and lambda alpha dot, and the masslessness condition then is then automatically fulfilled. So you solve the masslessness condition by expressing the momenta in this fashion. This would be the expression for the polarizations, and as you've probably seen, these bracket structures appear frequently in expressing these amplitudes, and they are defined over here. So you assign helicity to these helicity spinners. Lambda carries helicity minus 1/2, lambda tilde helicity plus 1/2. So let's start by looking at 3 amplitudes, and in particular, let's focus first on pure gluon amplitudes and how they can be classified according to their helicity dependence. So you classify gluon amplitudes by the number of helicity flips. You start out from a completely ordered phase, if you wish, where all helicities in a convention that all particles are outgoing, say, are plus. And then you just look at amplitudes by flipping more and more helicities down, and it turns out that supersymmetry actually forces you to have the all plus, or just the 1 helicity flipped amplitude, to be 0, which is true to all loops, not only in n equals 4, not only at tree level. And the first non-trivial amplitude is the one where you have 2 helicity flips. This is the Park-Taylor formula, which takes an extremely simple form spelled out here once you use helicity spinners. So you have an overall momentum-conserving delta function up front, and then just a purely holomorphic dependence on the lambda spinners. It's easy to check that if you look at the helicities of the particles involved, that this is the right structure. Now, when you go steps away from the MHV situation, so you consider 3 helicity flips, that would be an NMHV amplitude, which would occur for the first time at the 6-point level, and the next structure is when the next to next MHV amplitude, etc. So you can group them in this fashion, and the form of these amplitudes grows in complexity in the spin helicity formulation with the k of n to the k MHV, whereas along these lines in a fixed MHV class, the complexity is stable. So it's easy to write out sort of n, all general n leg amplitudes in this formalism. So the fact that the next two MHV amplitudes are more involved calls for a better formulation, and that is of course given by a formulation where you include the supersymmetry in the problem. So you augment these helicity spinners lambda and lambda tilde, 1 for every external leg, by an additional Grassmann variable accounting for the R symmetry, the SU4R symmetry structure that you have, an index A running from 1 to 4 for every leg. And then you can associate an on-shell superspace. I'm sorry, then you can write down an on-shell superfield in this on-shell superspace spanned by lambda, lambda tilde, and eta in the following fashion. So here you have an eta expansion, and you see that all the on-shell degrees of freedom of n equals 4 super-Mills theory re-emerge. So at order 0, you have a plus helicity gluon. Here you have the minus helicity gluon. These are the plus and minus 1/2 gluino states, and these are the six scalars, all packaged in one single onshell superfield. And the next step then is to consider not scattering amplitudes of these individual component fields, but rather of these superfields in one go. So you study superamplitudes, which are then now functions not only of lambda and lambda tilde, capturing the momentum and the polarization degrees of freedom, but also of the etas, which packages together parton amplitudes made out of gluons, gluinos, and scalars. And then the analog of the Park-Taylor formula, or rather, this is then the general structure of a tree-level superamplitude in n equals 4 supermills. You have the momentum conservation sitting up here, and then you also have a sort of supermomentum conservation in blue, this eight-dimensional Grassmann delta function, which is actually responsible for the vanishing of the all plus and one, you know, the sub-MHV amplitudes I showed you before. If all helicities would be plus, then that would violate this supermomentum conservation, because you see this structure itself is already of order eta to the 8, so you need to have if all fields were just plus helicity gluons, you couldn't they're not contained in this superamplitude. So once you understood this structure, what remains is to compute these polynomials P, which themselves have an eta expansion, and the eta expansion of this P then correspond precisely to the N next to the K MHV classification of the amplitudes we saw before, now on the superamplitude level. So at leading order, at eta to the 0, you have the MHV class, then the next MHV class, etc., till you reach the MHV bar class, depending on the number of total legs N. And what you then want to do is you want to find these polynomials P in general, and this you can do, this has been done, by using a recursive relation, which is a generalization of a famous BCFW recursion relation, taken up to this superspace. So you now not only shift in the lambda spinners, but you also shift in eta. And this super recursion can actually be solved analytically, so you can write down a complete solution. And in that sense, this was one done by Drummond and Henn, and in that sense, you have an exact closed analytical form for all tree-level amplitudes at your disposal. Let me just briefly give you an impression of this structure. So it's depending on how deep in the MHV level, in the MHV class you go, you have to sum over over a rooted tree and then multiply certain R invariants together, which, whose structure I sort of show you here. Now, these R invariants are interesting. We'll get back to that later on. But these are the super amplitudes, and what you can then do is if you want to extract really the tree-level amplitudes, you have to project these expressions down to the components. In a sense, you have to integrate out the etas depending on what amplitudes you're looking at. And this procedure can be done, and in particular, it can also be used to really extract the tree amplitudes of massless QCD by making suitable combinations of gluon-gluino amplitudes in order to suppress intermediate scalar exchange, which you could have. And at least up to three quark anti-quark lines. This is what we did in this paper, and this is actually now a real application, if you wish, of n equals 4 supermills, because these compact analytical formulae which you can gain from this process have then been used in honest phenomenology to compute recently the Z plus 4 jet cross section, using this black hat, which makes use of generalized unitarity, automated computation. And that the reason that you need that is that if you do this generalized unitarity technique, you pictorially what you do is you build loops by fusing trees together. So if you do this numerically, you have to call tree amplitudes very often, and then it is important that you're fast. And this you can do. Sorry? what happens to the extended super...
You said that you are using n equal to 4 super symmetry to analyze some real exponents.
I'm using n equals to 4 super mils to establish the tree-level amplitudes of massless QCD, so no supersymmetry left. And the trick is that for the, you know, if you, first of all, gluon trees are the same in all gauge theories. So if you include quarks, the fact that the quarks are in different representations than the gluinos is not really important or relevant for the color-ordered amplitudes. What you have to take care of is that you do not have intermediate scalar exchanges. And this you can, this is, you know, this is an own story, but you can take linear combinations of gluon-gluino amplitudes to effectively simulate quark amplitudes, at least up to, you know, not too many quark lines. Good. So this I just wanted to mention. This is an application of this business, but now I want to come to more structural questions, and that is the symmetries of these super amplitudes. So we stick with tree level, and we want to understand what symmetries these tree level amplitudes have. Of course, you expect to find the PSU22/4 symmetry structure again. And how do you find that? Well, you will be able to write down generators acting in this on-shell superspace. So differential operators in this on-shell superspace, which annihilate the amplitude. And there are two symmetries which are obvious. These are just these multiplicative operators spelled out here, which in a distributional sense annihilate the tree-level amplitude. But there are also less obvious symmetries next to, you know, standard things like the Lorentz rotations, which leave us invariant. And these are exactly the conformal generators, or special conformal and the Suzy conformal generators, which are second-order differential operators. These are less obvious, but also annihilate the amplitude. And in particular, so the statement is that all these generators here, including the central charge acting locally, annihilate the tree-level superamplitudes. And here you have, you know, a similarity to the spin chain picture, because you have to sum really these generators over all external legs of your amplitude. The fact that the C kills the annihilates the amplitude locally is related to the fact that the superamplitudes have uniform helicity on every leg, and the helicity operator is just 1 minus the central charge. So here I give you all these all the SU22/4 generators, just so that you have that you see how they look, and I'm using a shorthand notation spelled out here. Now this story is not entirely correct, because there are subtleties arising when you have collinear momenta, so when neighboring lambdas are proportional to each other, and then there is this conformal anomaly kicking in, and you have to augment these structures by level changing terms, which has been analyzed by these people down here, but I don't want to get into this right now. So here I used to call this L. Good. So this is an expected symmetry structure, the SU22/4. The surprising thing is that you have more than that, and you have a dual conformal symmetry, which is related to the Wilson loop scattering amplitude duality, acting as conformal generators in this region momenta space, this dual X space related to the initial momenta in this fashion, which are exactly the cusps of the light-like polygonal Wilson loops, which are dual to the scattering amplitudes. And this can even be lifted to a dual superconformal symmetry, taking care of fermionic or supersymmetric partners of the axis called thetas. So the dual conformal generator under which the amplitude is covariant and can be extended in a way so that it's invariant just looks as follows. It is the normal conformal, special conformal symmetry generator in X space plus fermionic terms. And what you can now do is you can translate this operator into the original on-shell superspace spanned by lambda, lambda tilde, and eta by solving these constraints here, or these relations, in a sort of retarded manner. And when you then write out the dual conformal generator, you see that it obtains a non-local structure, because there's this sort of this memory function, because the xi at position I depends on all the I minus one previous momentum. So this is then the hallmark of the Youngian symmetry, because you can then understand that the combination of the superconformal and dual superconformal algebra give rise to the Youngian PSU 2/4, how it is realized on super amplitude in the following sense. So these would be the conventional superconformal symmetry commutation relation, and then you have a level number. So at level one, you would have this. So the level one states transform in this fashion, and they are explicitly represented as this non-local structure, which we observed back here by making use of the level zero generators. And then the special conformal K is then related to the level one P. You have to augment it with some additional terms in the following sense. So the interesting thing is that in principle, all you need is you have your superconformal symmetry, the ordinary superconformal symmetry, and you stick up your head with one level one generator, P1, and that alone suffices to generate all of the Youngian, so the whole infinite dimensional symmetry algebra under which the tree-level amplitudes are invariant. Good. So here's another transparency where you can write down the general Youngian generators, but it's not so illuminating. And the statement now is that the tree-level superamplitudes are invariant under this whole Youngian algebra. And that, of course, is interesting also with, you know, because it has a similar structure than these spin chains. Again, there are I want to stress these subtleties with collinear terms, which I don't want to get into here. Good. So the tree level is nice and understood. You know, in a sense, you have a complete solution for the tree level amplitude. You have a representation of a Youngian symmetry. Now, you can also show that this is a constructive structure. So even if you wouldn't have known the amplitudes beforehand, you can use the Youngian symmetry in conjunction with these correction terms to actually construct three-level amplitudes. So the obvious question is, what can be done at loop level? So here the situation is more complicated, because beyond tree level, you encounter infrared divergences in scattering amplitudes of n equals 4 super mills. No UV divergences, but IR divergences due to the massless particles involved. And that these divergences need to be regulated, and this regularization naturally breaks the conformal and naively also the dual conformal symmetry. So the question is, what is a good regulator to use in order to save a maximum amount of symmetries? So the standard regularization method is dimensional reduction, which preserves supersymmetry. So you go from n equals 1, 10d superhang mills down to superhang mills in 4 minus epsilon dimensions. But together with Aldai, Hen, and Schuster, we proposed an alternative method which regulates the IR divergences by moving on to the Higgs branch of the theory. So we Higgs the theory, introduce massive particles, and these massive particles can be chosen, at least in the planar limit, can be used to IR regulate the amplitudes. I'll show you that in a bit more. And there are many nice features about this regulator. First of all, it's sort of built in the theory, and it is inspired by ADS-CFT in the sense that you can understand it also from the string picture, as I will show you. And the interesting thing is that the dual conformal symmetry can be preserved. It is preserved in form of an extended dual conformal symmetry, which has now been proven by rephrasing this way of regulating the amplitudes in terms of the six-dimensional superhang mills theory, which I will discuss. It is also of importance to the manifold developments taking place recently, which aim at constructing the integrand of loop amplitudes, which are also manifest, which can be performed, as we heard yesterday, in a manifest Youngian invariant way. But the tricky thing is still that this integrand is, you know, it's just an integrand. If you would integrate it, it would diverge, and you have to understand how to regulate the integrand. And for this, the Higgs regulator is also a natural tool. So I want to show you that Higgs regulator in some detail. So the idea is that you take the string picture serious, in a sense that you have a bulk of nv free brains, and the scattering states are strings stretched between these IR regulating brains, which are all separated in a certain amount, and this separation of the brains leads to a Higgs effect in the gauge theory. So you start out with un plus m, and then for every scattered particle you have an individual brain, so you break it down to un cross u1 to the m, and you take a limit where n, the bulk, is much, much larger than m. And then what you have in generic planar graphs is that the external states are massive but light. They depend on the differences of these individual Higgs masses you put. But the outer loop is then given by one heavy, or it's given by heavy fields, and that leads to this IR regularization. Yeah. Well, I'll get to that. So that's, of course, the interesting question. So first of all, if you step back and think again in terms of string theory, what the dual conformal symmetry was you could understand it by T dualizing the theory, and T dualization in the Z component. So these masses can be in the T-dual theory are related to the new radial coordinate R, and then the SO2,4 isometry of ADS5 in the T-dual theory, expressed in Poincaré coordinates, is still there, and therefore you expect to find again a conformal symmetry acting on the amplitudes, but now acting in a higher dimension, in a five dimensional space, where you also allow your differential operators to twiggle, to shiver in R, respectively in M. So this is what we call extended dual conformal symmetry, which you expect to be there in the amplitudes. And in order to see that, one has to compute a concrete amplitude. Before I do that, let me just briefly show you what I mean concretely by Higgsing. So you do, pick, say, the ninth. So one of the scalar fields here in the lower M cross M sector, you introduce a Higgs expectation value for every single entry, and then what you get is you get light fields, which are the external fields you're looking at, and you get these heavy fields. You can also take the same masses for all particles, and then the external states would be massless again, but still the surrounding loop would be massive. And you also, in doing this, you of course also introduce new vertices, in particular new bosonic three-point interactions, which are proportional to the mass parameter. Good, so here's a sample calculation, the simplest one-loop integral the simplest one-loop amplitude you could consider, which would be a scattering of four scalar fields. This is very, very nice because the tree level is just completely trivial. It's just proportional to the coupling constant G squared Young-Wills. And then at the one-loop order, you find this particular massive box integral. The triangles and the bubbles, which could in principle contribute, cancel out. So there's just this one graph you have to compute, and when you re-express it in the region momenta in the x variables, you see this very nice and suggestive structure, because if you introduce a fifth coordinate, a fifth component to x, which is just proportional to the external mass, you see you get this very simple. You get the box integral in five dimensions, but with the constraint that the loop momentum is only to be integrated in a four-dimensional subspace. And it turns out that this box integral is indeed extended dual conformal invariant in the following sense, that you have a conformal symmetry in X in the X, in the dual variables, but also in the M's.
So it's like, it's the conformal,
the dual conformal generator in five dimensions, where you interpret the fifth component as the mass. And indeed, this symmetry in particular forbids the existence of triangles or bubbles, and an explicit one-loop computation confirms that they're also not there. So you can see how this extended conformal symmetry constrains the possible integrals appearing. This has been pushed to higher loops and higher multiplicities, as well as the Regel limit, by Hen and co-workers, and is stable. So there's the natural conjecture that this extended dual conformal invariance is exact in the massively regulated n equals 4 Super-Yang-Mills theory. And indeed, this can be proven to be true by studying the six-dimensional version, which I'll discuss next. So the last part of the talk is now going to address the question of symmetries of this massively regulated loop amplitudes in n equals 4 Super-Yang-Mills. So the key here is the following observation that the 6D n equals to 1,1 Super-Yang-Mills theory, that amplitudes in this theory, when you interpret the fifth and the sixth components as masses, and again, artificially or by hand restrict the integrals to lie only in a four-dimensional subspace, that these tree and loop amplitudes are the same as the massively regulated n equals 4 Super-Yang-Mills amplitudes. So this is just an expression of dimensional regularization. So in order to study this in more detail, I now want to introduce you to spinner helicity formalism in six dimensions. So now the helicity spinners carry two indices related to the Lorentz group in six dimensions. So A runs from 1 to 4, and the little groups SU2 cross SU2 are captured here by A and A dot indices. And the six-dimensional momentum in the then bispinner language is then an anti-symmetric tensor in A and B contracted in this fashion. And you have to also augment, and here I'm missing a tilde. This would be the same expression in the tilded language, and it's related to the untilded one in this by contracting with the, this should be CV2, with the epsilon tensor, four-dimensional epsilon tensor. So on top of that, you have SUSY partners, eta and eta tilde, which allow you to write down these multiplicative SUSY generators, super translations, Q and Q tilde. And you can then study an on-shell superfield with an eta expansion, which just in the same manner as we did before in n equals to 4 Super-Yang-Mills, this is again massless n equals to 6, six-dimensional n equals to 1,1 Super-Yang-Mills, you have these superfields. Now, there are already some perturbative results in this theory. So a lower point amplitudes have been studied at tree level. There's also, again, the super BCFW recursion, and that has been used to also, generalized unitarity methods have been used to compute four-point amplitudes at one and two-loop order. And all these, I claim, the tree-level amplitudes are directly related to the trees on the Higgs branch for n equals to 4, and the loop amplitudes can be related to the massively regulated n equals to 4 amplitudes by making this prescription here. And of course, in the end, you send these masses to 0, and that is then your regulator.
If all the internal moments are four-dimensional, if you have internal loops, you also have the evidence. We have all loops of light particles inside. Those are divergent.
So you're worried about UV divergences here?
Yeah.
No, they are absent. The U. Okay. Yeah. So this goes back to this picture here. whether you could not have situations where massless particles inside lead to IR divergence. Well, it seems to be not. I mean, there's no really hard argument, but we believe that is not happening. I don't think that we have a real completely that we don't have a real proof of this, but the fact that the mass is sitting out here. It's also important that you're looking only at planar graphs, I should say. If you would look at non-planar graphs, you wouldn't cancel all IR divergences.
But if I do the endpoint function of massless particles, it doesn't matter what is the size.
Let's discuss it later on. Yeah. It's not obvious. It's what? So you're saying we will start seeing a problem at four loops? Let's talk about this afterwards. Good. So where was I? Yeah. So back to the 6D story. Yeah. Good. So what you of course now do is you again introduce a dual on-shell superspace. So you again introduce region momenta X and the fermionic partners. And the interesting observation now is that you also have a dual conformal symmetry, although you do not have a conformal symmetry, of course, in six dimensions, because six-dimensional Young-Mills theory is not conformal, but you have a dual conformal symmetry at tree level, that is, at least. And it's what you expect it to be. This is the differential operator in X space, and you have to augment it by certain fermionic terms, which I didn't all spell out. But even more, and this has been shown in a very nice paper by Den and Huang, that this extends to the loop level if you do in particular this what I was demanding you to do up here, that you artificially restrict the loop momentum integral only to four dimensions. And the statement is in particular that you have to divide, so you have to strip off the momentum and supermomentum conserving delta functions, and then that K, the dual conformal K, with this factor, annihilates the amplitudes also at the loop level. So there is a dual conformal symmetry, an exact dual conformal symmetry also at the loop level if you do this loop integration in 4D. And that amounts to a proof of the exact dual conformal symmetry of massively regulated n equals to 4 superangle amplitudes. Let me not get into the proof due to time, and see what we can do with this. So the question that occurred to us after this work of Den and Huang is whether there is a way to understand now sort of the microscopics of this dual conformal generator in four-dimensional massively regulated language. So what we want to do is very similar to what I was telling you in the beginning about the emergence of Youngian symmetry, our reinterpretation of the dual conformal symmetry as a level one momentum of a Youngian system, now for this regulated theory. So the question is, can we again interpret the dual conformal K as the level one Youngian generator P mu 1 of now the regularized n equals to 4 superangles? And that is, can we understand the Youngian symmetry also in the regulated theory? So in order to do that, we have to translate the six-dimensional structure to four dimensions, so you have to compactify down to 4D. Well, this is a technical thing, but you know, you can imagine that you can find, here would be the 6D momentum. Here you have the 4D momenta, and you also have the masses, which are the fifth, they correspond to the fifth and the sixth component of six-dimensional momentum. But of course, when you land in four dimensions, you will land at a massive theory. So these P's arising here will be, you will have to re-express in a helicity spinner formalism for massive particles in 4D. And here is one variant. There are various variants, but this is the variant we like the most. You pick two sets of helicity spinners, lambda, lambda tilde, and mu tilde, and there's a constraint, namely that the contraction of lambda with mu or mu tilde with lambda tilde is just equal to the mass of a mass bar, and we want to work with real spinners and real masses, so we have this additional constraint that m is equal to m bar. Now, the first observation is that because you can reinterpret, even at tree level, the massively regularized n equals to 4 superangular amplitudes as coming from 6 dimensions, that there's a, even before you start talking about dual conformal symmetry, that there is an enhanced Lorentz symmetry that you would expect. Well, first of all, you again have, let's just look at the bosonic generators, you would have the Lorentz symmetry generators in 4D, but because these amplitudes can be embedded in a higher dimension, in 6 dimensions, you should also have additional symmetries. So one would be here this vector-like quantity, which I called H, which is just related to the L mu 5 and L mu 6 Lorentz generators in the six-dimensional space. And similarly, the L 5 6 is related to something which one naturally would call the dilatation symmetry. So you have a dilatation symmetry, and you have a vector-like additional symmetry generator, but it's, of course, not the dual conformal K, unfortunately. So this would be the bosonic generators. You also have super partners, which I don't want to go into too much details because of the time. But what algebra do they obey? Well, H, this new vector-like quantity with P, gives you M, and H with M gives you P. H gives you the Lorentz generators, and H just transforms under Lorentz generator under Lorentz transformation as it should. And here I have a SUSY algebra relations. So now M enters as a generator in the business because it's related to the fifth component of your underlying theory. Good. So now here comes the game you can play. You take the 6D dual conformal K. For starters, let K run from 0 to 3 only. Mu, so only the four components in the four-dimensional space. And re-express it in now this massive on-shell 4D superspace spanned by lambda, lambda tilde, mu, mu tilde, and then you have, I didn't introduce them here, these are the xi and xi tilde, these are the super partners. And again, you will have to add sort of a correction term, delta k, and there's some story with the x1 terms. But in any case, it all adds up, and you find a very nice structure, which is very suggestive of what you would expect for a level one generator in this Yangian sense. And this gives rise, if you look at the algebra that you had here with the H symmetry generator, that H with P gives M, so that gives rise to a level one mass generator, which has this form down here, and the level one mass itself with H gives you back P. So this works, this is nice, but the distinguishing feature now is that in this six-dimensional Poincaré algebra, the P and the M form an ideal, so they will not allow you to generate all, you know, the whole an infinite dimensional symmetry structure, because P with M gives you nothing, and you just don't get more. You're just stuck with P and M. No, it's not a central element because M doesn't commute with H. M with H is P. You see, M is like the fifth component of P, and H is a rotation, L mu 5. So it relates the fifth, it rotates the fifth component of the momentum to P mu. It's not a central element. But because H is not a conformal generator, H with P doesn't give you L and L, but it just gives you M1, so you turn in circles. And that's, I mean, mathematically you have an ideal, so it's spanned by P and M, and this is the form of a commutation at level 0, and at level 1 you don't get much more. So that's that's the conclusion that we have at this point. We have not yet found, although we have tried, but we're not finished. This is ongoing work, as I said, whether there's a level one SUSY generator, which you would expect, because here you have level one. If you have level ones, you would expect that Q bar should be also lifted to level one. But it seems that this infinite dimensional symmetry structure does not naturally come about, because that hinges, of course, upon the conformal symmetry, where if you had a level 1P, you would generate all the other guys. And that's where we stand. Of course, we have reasons to believe that there's a deformed version of conformal symmetry. And if you would find that, that could then give you back integrability. At this point, you don't have integrability. Good. So that was what I wanted to say. Let me give a short summary. So, in the beginning of the talk, I showed you that all three-level amplitudes in n=4 super Young-Mills are known analytically, and that you can even apply them for real phenomenology. That these three-level amplitudes are invariant under an infinite-dimensional Youngian symmetry, and that the real challenge in this business is to understand whether the Youngian symmetry extends to the loop level. I believe that this massive Higgs regulator I introduced to you is the right framework in order to address these questions, and that in particular one can show that an extended dual conformal invariance exists at loop level, and that restricts the possible integrals at higher loop. If you translate this dual conformal generator to the four-dimensional language, you establish this symmetry structure of massively regulated n=4 super Young-Mills. You have an extended super Poincaré symmetry. I mean, so you have an expected super Poincaré, but you also have H mu and also a dilatation symmetry, but you don't have special conformal transformation. Then you have level 1 P and level 1 M. And the key question now is whether there's a way to also introduce a deformed K. Now, we have reasons to believe that should go, because in a different framework based on dimensional regularization, perturbative studies by Sevilla and Vieira and also by our group have established that you can find these deformations, although the closure of the algebra is still an open question here, and it's the relation to this massive regularization needs to be understood. So that's still open questions. So the key question in any case is whether integrability exists for the regulated theory, and if it completely determines, of course, the our loop form of the planar scattering amplitudes. Thank you very much. And before the questions, I just want to make a brief commercial break here for next year. Amplitudes 2012 will take place in Hamburg. This is the date, and there's a website associated with it, which you can find. Cool. Thanks.
Questions?